Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
To reveal the full spectrum of its dazzling color.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:04 the time. Hour number two here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Tuesday, May 19th, 2026 edition. Greg, Eli, Jay with you here. We're broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. They got their Memorial Day sale going on right now. Currently 75, although it's another humid start to your day. 82 is what it feels like. 88 for the high today. And there is an expected thunderstorm. Maybe some more thunderstorms tonight, possibly. Hail and damaging winds. Again, that's just a possibility. I don't want to be the bearer of the bad news, but it is in the forecast, and we're looking at the possibility of thunderstorms. Boy, the next 5 days. Now I see it for Saturday and for Sunday as well. Again, a chance. Doesn't mean it's an all-day affair, but just keep an eye on that. It is Tuesday. You know what that means. It's time for Humdinger's Trivia.
That's right. It also means it's Taco Tuesday over at Humdinger's with their chicken and fish tacos. Just $2 each every Tuesday over at Humdinger's. You can take advantage of that deal. Mondays, you can take advantage of their special on their Humdinger shrimp. Fridays, special on the fish and crispy fish and chips. Of course, every day is just a great day to go to Humdinger's and enjoy some of that delicious food. Like one of the many grilled fish options that they have with some of those great toppings and great sides. Maybe it's a po' boy sandwich. Maybe the piri piri burger. Maybe it's one of their great salads with some of that grilled fish on top of the salad. Whatever it is, delicious, healthy items you'll find over at Humdinger's. Poplar and Massey is where you'll find them, online at humdingersrestaurant.com. You can check out the menu. You can get check out those specials, get information about catering. If you've got an event you need catered, they are a great option for that as well. All the information right there online. You can also order online for pickup when you go to humdingersrestaurant.com. If you are the first to answer our trivia question correctly, you will win a $25 gift certificate to Humdinger's, and you can answer via text on our Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 901-360-8255, 360-8255. Text in those answers. First correct answer gets the $25 gift certificate. If you've won in the last 30 days, you're not eligible, and you only get one guess. Here is today's question. Last night, Victor Wembanyama, 41 points, 24 rebounds in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. We'll see if he can do that again in this series. If he does, he'll match some other people in the past. Who was the last player to have multiple 40-point, 20-rebound games in the same playoff series? Last player to have multiple 40-20 games in the same playoff series in the NBA. Last player to do it. 360-8255, 360-8255. Again, the first correct answer gets that $25 gift certificate to Humdinger's.
Guess what? It's time to talk some golf. It's time for Mickey Barker.
It's time to hit the links and talk some golf. It's Mickey and Friends. Mickey Barker, administrator of golf for the Bluff City, joins Greg and Eli each week. Now, here's Mickey Barker with Greg and Eli.
He is Mickey Barker, administrator of golf for the city of Memphis, PGA professional, and Hall of Fame golfer from Lipscomb University. You can follow Mickey on Twitter at MickeyBarker1. In an hour earlier than usual, because we are abbreviated today. We are done at 9 because of Ole Miss baseball in the SEC tournament. So thanks for getting up earlier with us. Although, knowing you, Mickey, you're probably up at the crack of dawn.
Yeah, typically up pretty early, so just getting here a little bit early today.
Well, I know that this past weekend you had a big event over at Galloway, which I got a chance to play yesterday. The Galloway Open, how did that go?
It was great. Yeah, the golf course was in really good shape. It's coming along, growing in very well from the irrigation upgrades and some tree work that you saw out there. But the Galloway Championship was great. We had 110 players, senior division, regular division, and even the ladies division. Ryan Delaney was the winner, 64, really good score. Ryan has turned into just a fantastic player, hits it 9 miles. So.
64, huh? Yeah.
Pretty strong.
Wow. Now, you, as you just said, the trees. And I heard you on with Wolo, I think, last week, and you said it's not as many trees as you think. Is it just maybe more where those trees are coming down that it just seems like it's a lot?
Yeah, and they were very big. Each one of them seemed like 10 trees when we pulled them down. But one really big tree behind 18 Green that had been shading that green for several years now and really giving us some problems, and a couple around number 2 Green that were causing some issues with shade and the roots growing into the turf. And that's probably, you know, the tree sucking up the water and the roots growing into the greens. It's probably the worst part of having the trees that close.
Did you find my golf ball? Did it come down when you cut the tree down?
We had a couple Greg Gaston golf balls.
Did you find any clubs up in the trees?
We just put those back where they go.
So people may be throwing some clubs up into those things as well.
But a lot of the trees are you know, they're really old, and when we cut into them, they were hollow in the middle and needed to come down anyway.
So they're going to die.
Yeah, they were going to, just whether it was going to be this year or next year or the next windstorm we had, then we got a real mess. So,
obviously, from a shade perspective, it's easy to tell. How can you really tell as far as roots sucking up water and what trees may need to come out?
Yeah, you can just kind of watch the color of the grass and see it. You know, there are some of those big oak trees, there'll be a perfect circle around the tree line, the drip line, where there's grass there, but it just will not turn green. It's just kind of off color yellow, and it's really tough to get much of a canopy of grass there. The roots, you know, you can see though, they come to the surface on the greens.
Sure.
And little tiny roots, and we do some root pruning and things like that, but it just really doesn't take care of it until you take the tree out.
So with the new irrigation system that's almost complete being put in, how are, from Joe Q Public's point of view, what differences are we going to see when we go out and play Galloway?
Well, the biggest difference, hopefully, you won't see the irrigation system running much during the day. Over the past few years, we've had to run basically all day long to get enough water on the course because we were having to get around some issues that we had. With this, the superintendent will be able to run all night long or early in the morning. He'll be able to control individual heads from his phone, whereas before he was having to do that at the satellite boxes and would control two or three holes at one time. And it was really difficult. It was a great system when it was put in 2001, but it had come to end of life.
Technology's come a little ways.
It has, absolutely. And before, if you had one head go out or a problem on that line, it took the whole section out.
It's like a light bulb for your Christmas tree.
Right. It took the whole. Now, if a head goes out, it's just that one head and can be fixed and everything else still running.
Last week, we talked about the new clubhouse that's coming to Audubon. And now today, we're talking about what's going on at Galloway. What other projects in the future, what other things are going to be happening here as the summer moves along, or we get into the summer months, actually?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. At Overton Park, at OP9, they're always tinkering a little bit. The Overton Park Conservancy has a golf board, and they raise money. And in coming weeks, we're going to talk with Parks Dixon's going to come on and talk a little bit more about that. But they're always changing a little bit, adding some turf here, taking out a few trees, adding some mounds. Our superintendent there, Rob Roy, does a great job of – he's a really good operator of backhoe, and he can shape with it. And, and so they're always doing a little bit of work there. And so you'll see some changes, some more turf areas and some better conditions there at Overton.
Over the weekend, or of course last week, we had the second major of the year with the PGA Championship and a surprise winner. Have you seen it? Yesterday, were there a lot of people out wearing two gloves playing golf by chance?
Yeah, our glove sales were our right-handed glove sales were through the roof yesterday.
And your iron cover sale.
Yeah.
I didn't even understand like what they were talking about at first, but apparently to protect the irons, his father or mother, or you know the story about that?
Yeah, his dad had worked multiple jobs and really sacrificed to be able to purchase clubs and get him to, you know, the right teachers and things like that. Really made a lot of sacrifices and said, you know, when we get you these new clubs, we want them protected. And he's that type guy that he wanted to protect them as well. And now, obviously, he doesn't pay for golf clubs, but he's just stayed with that and puts the protection on the iron.
As he said, he wants to, like, it's like kind of a reminder of what he came from.
Right,
like,
absolutely. So, yeah. And, you know, now that he's a major champion, people don't make fun of him too much anymore.
And the caddy's like, can we ditch the head covers on the irons? I mean, I don't want to have to put a head cover on every time you shoot one.
I hear, like, the gloves he wears, he said, like, they're not even really golf gloves.
Oh, really?
They're like all-weather gloves because he used to play so much in the cold. He started wearing these gloves, and he's just kept wearing them. They're not even truly designed for golf. They're like all-weather gloves.
I had not heard that about the gloves. I knew they were black gloves, and they really stand out. But, you know, there may be a lot of people trying that now.
It's whatever you feel comfortable with.
It's a copycat world.
Yeah, the absolute best 10-hole stretch in a major championship that you'll see. I mean, it's up there with any stretches like that you'll ever see.
Yeah, so Ronimick certainly showcased its teeth. It was not an easy course, and I love the fact that that was the case. We know we see that with the U.S. Open every single year for the most part. Sometimes with the PGA Championship, we can have those scores. You get the 14 or 15, and guys are destroying the course. But here it was, you better make perfect shots, not just good shots. You better make perfect shots. And as you said, Rye was able to do that, especially in the back nine. You knew the scores were out there because Kurt Kitayama shot a 63 on Sunday. But for the most part, that big leaderboard, that congested leaderboard, one by one, they just fell off. And we didn't get the shootout we thought we were going to get on Sunday. So it really was drama-free. I loved Aaron Rye being able to step up and win. Great story. But I was we talked about this yesterday. I had my popcorn and my drink, and I was ready for just great golf with all these dudes competing. And really, it wasn't the case.
It wasn't. And when Justin Thomas finished at 5-under, he made that great par putt on 18 to get in at 5. I really thought, hey, that's probably going to be the number.
Did you really?
I did, because I thought, you know, he's got it posted. It's going to be tough. There's going to be bogeys. Guys are going to see that score, and they're going to – you know, a lot of times when you see a score, you're just trying to get to that. You're not trying to get past it. And, you know, like Cam Smith came in, bogeyed 18 to fall back to 4. Mm-hmm. And it just really looked to me like 5 was going to be the number up until Aaron started going crazy. But you saw I think the PGA got it right. They got the setup right. It was really, really hard. But you could score if you hit the perfect shot. And he did just about for 10 straight holes.
How surprised were you that, you know, a guy like Rory, plays the par fives at even par for the week, which is just insane with the way he drives the ball. Scotty couldn't make a short putt to save his life. I mean, it was incredible. Like, none of those guys really were able to make any sort of move.
They didn't. It was just one little part of their game was off. And Rory was just not driving it in the exact right spot, especially on the par fives where he could do any damage. It was very similar to Scheffler at the Masters. He couldn't do any good on the par fives, and that's where both tournaments were lost. Obviously, this week Scheffler, if he could have putted with his eyes closed, I mean, my goodness.
Is there something like? I mean, he's gone. He's got the like. Did. Is there something wrong with his stroke? Like, what do you see why he's missing that many short putts?
I think it was confidence. He just didn't have the confidence to make the right stroke, hit it on the exact – I think he was guessing a little bit on the line. This is just my opinion, but I think he was guessing a little bit on the line and then just didn't have the confidence to hit it exactly where he wanted to.
I know LIV's a polarizing topic, but I love it that in the majors, the guys that qualify, who play LIV – are playing in this event, and we saw John Rahm right there in the end. We saw Cam Smith right there in the end. And even though it was a bad tournament for Bryson DeChambeau, who's the biggest name out there, you had Joaquin Neiman, who was there for a while. I love the fact that we see these guys, not that it isn't competitive week in, week out. I think it's the most competitive it's ever been on the PGA Tour. But when we see some of those guys, I know people want to kick live around and kick live when it's down, and of course complain about the whole thing to begin with, and understandably so with the Saudi backing and all that. But to me, I want to see all of them together, and I don't know what's going to happen, but to be able to see those guys to play and actually compete pretty well, I love it. I don't know about you.
I think so too. I think, you know, having Rahm in the mix there, and, you know, if you could have had DeChambeau, if he'd had a decent week where he could have been there, I think that makes the tournament better when you have the best players in the world at the top. It doesn't matter that, you know, some Aaron Rye, he's a top 50 player in the world, wins, but having them in the mix just draws so many more people, so many more eyeballs to it. But I think Rahm is past all of, you know, he's not fighting with the DP World Tour anymore. I think he and maybe Cam Smith too, he's done fishing, I guess, so back to playing golf again. But it gets them past the hump of, okay, they may know that Liv's going away, okay? And so now they can concentrate on what it's going to take to get
back. I mean, Patrick Reed went the DP World Tour route, kick and tail. He was really good at the Masters and really good here.
Yeah.
So there's another name that's out there who's a guy who's capable of winning these majors. And I just want to see all these guys. And at least in the majors, we do see that.
Yeah, Patrick Reed, he is a hard golf course player. He loves the hard golf course. He's probably not going to be in contention when they get to 20 under par, but when they're in the single digits and, you know, low teens, he's always in the mix there.
Well, it's funny, you're talking about Cam Smith. They said he started work with Claude Harmon now. Like, it seems like he's like getting serious about golf again.
Right.
It's like, okay, yeah. I've been terrible for a couple of years. I need to get back in and get to what I was. Because, I mean, God, with that putting stroke and everything else, when he won the one major, we thought, I mean, Cam Smith, this is like one of the real bright young stars.
Yeah, he's like the new Ben Crenshaw. He can't hit it on the planet. He hits it off the charts with the driver, but he makes everything. You know, if he can, again, if the scores are fairly low where he, you know, his wayward tee balls don't kill him, you know, he's going to be in contention. But, yeah, it's neat to see him back. You know, he seems like a pretty good guy, but he wasn't really concerned about golf after all the money.
Heck, we even saw a Dustin Johnson sighting. Dustin Johnson actually played well
for
the weekend.
Another live golfer. And, of course, next year they go to Dallas, so they're in Scheffler's backyard. But that's a year away. But a month away is the U.S. Open, and that'll be at Shinnecock Hills, which is one of the great courses that we have in this country.
Yeah, they back-to-back hard courses. I mean, you could see a single digit win there at Shinnecock, especially if they get the weather. And, you know, Fleetwood was really good when Koepka won when they were there the last time, and so it should be a really good battle. I would think Scheffler would be pointing to this one. Again, it seems like he's going to hit it really good. His distance control, proximity to the hole was fantastic. So if he putts at all at the U.S. Open, it could be a Grand Slam. Next Grand Slam guy.
That's right. And then the Open Championship is where this year? Do you know?
You got me head? On that one.
Yeah. I should have looked that up last night because I was wondering about that yesterday. But, then you got the Open Championship.
It is kind of tough to be, you know, mid-July, we're done with the major season, you know, with the PGA now being in May. A lot of people say, well, it opens up more courses where they can play. But it also makes, you know, like Thursday and Friday of this week up there in Aronimink work. Cold,
yeah.
And windy, and wet, and so
it can be warm up there this time too. Though
it can be, yeah. And of
that's
course, by Sunday it was 80, I guess, or right. mid-80s, something like that. So,
well, to your point though, I love the fact that, and the schedule is going to change again, but I love the fact that we have a big event one per month leading up to the FedEx Cup playoffs,
right?
Because this is why I always think football season goes fast. It's the anticipation. Every week, there's one game. It's like baseball. Even though I love baseball, it drags. There's 162 games in regular season. Football is a game once a week. So you're anticipating already the next game. How's my team going to bounce back the next week? Here's who we're playing. Golf's the same thing. It's like, okay, you got tournaments, and we watch them all because we're big golf fans. But for those that are just, you know, average, just watch the majors, every month you can point to, okay, now we got the U.S. Open I'm looking forward to. Then the Open Championship. Then the FedEx Cup playoffs. We have the Masters starting it off in April. I love the fact that we have that. But that schedule, I don't know how they're going to tweak it, but I know it's going to, because Steve Sands has told us a number of times for 2028, that schedule's changing.
Yeah, it's going to be different. And I know there's going to be golf on most every week. You know, they're not going to go away from the avid golf fan that watches golf every week. There's going to be golf to watch. It's just the big events, like you said, are going to be spread out through, you know, I'm sure the Players is still going to be in March, and then April, May, June, July is going to be one big event per per year, per month. And I think it'll be good. It's just going to be different.
Well, Memphis could be the one that's affected most because it may be moved out of August and moved out of that playoff spot. And Steve Sands also told us when he was on last week that he believed that there will be no more. What is it, Eli? What do they call the tournament? When they have the big tournament and there's another tournament that weekend, it's a – not mirror, it's a – whatever it's called, the right. secondary, I'll just call it secondary, he says they're going away. He thinks they're going away. There won't be that. You won't be able to play at Myrtle Beach if you don't make it to Truist.
Right. But I think those will be the fill-in events. Those will be in the weeks where you don't have where the Schefflers and the Rahms and all those guys don't play.
Yeah, they'll play, but it'll be a separate thing where they get the entire showcase is that tournament as opposed to it's the secondary.
The opposite field.
The opposite field. Thank you. Okay. For folks who want to make a tee time, where do they need to go?
MemphisPublicLinks.com. You can make a tee time for any of our seven golf courses. We're opening up. One big news. We're opening up Pine Hill on Mondays, starting with Memorial Day and going forward. They'll be open on Monday. So it's another spot to play on Mondays.
Absolutely. Mickey, great stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
We'll do it again next week. Mickey will be back at his normal time of 9:05. The administrator of golf for the city of Memphis. Follow Mickey on Twitter at MickeyBarker1. Hour number two brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers, your family's jeweler at 4900 Poplar between Mendenhall and St. Nick, on the web at GaddisJewelers.com. If you're looking to get engaged this summer, this fall, make sure James Gaddis Jewelers is one of the jewelers you check out for those beautiful diamond engagement rings, wedding rings, personally designed wedding sets. They have both the natural earth diamonds and the lab-grown diamonds. All their diamonds are independently graded and certified. They understand there's a lot of competition, so they make sure they have a price point to suit everyone's budget. For all your jewelry needs, from watches to necklaces to pendants to bracelets to one-of-a-kind vintage and estate jewelry to antique jewelry, James Gaddis Jewelers has it for you. They're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, Saturday, 10 to 4, closed on Sunday. Once again, 4900 Poplar in the heart of East Memphis. It's James Gaddis Jewelers. All right, when we come back, we'll let you know we have a winner of our Humdinger's Trivia, and we got some Memphis Tigers football news to get into as well. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers.
Don't you just love it?
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Very superstitious.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:30 the time, hour number two of the program, but only 2 hours today. Ole Miss is playing early in the SEC tournament. In fact, game number one. The ninth seed, the Ole Miss Rebels, taking on the 16 seed Missouri Tigers today. They'll first pitch is 9:30, but the pregame at 9, so we'll wrap things up in about 30 minutes.
We do have a correct answer in our Humdinger's Trivia. I'm going to need a tiebreaker coming up here, Jay. The question was, who was the last player to have multiple 40-20 games in the same playoff series? Of course, Victor Wembanyama last night with 41 points, 24 rebounds in game one of the Western Conference Finals. So he will have an opportunity to have multiple 40-20 games in this series. But the question was, who was the last to do that? Do you know this one, Jay?
My guess was Shaq.
It is Shaq. Shaq did it back-to-back games against Sacramento in 2001, games one and two. He went for 44-21 in game one and followed that up with 43-20 in game two.
See, that's why they poison Kobe that next year. All because of Shaq.
What year was that?
2001. He then added another one in the finals that year, in the NBA finals. I think at times we do forget how dominant Shaq was like that.
Oh, we don't forget.
I mean, like, you're just so big. There was nothing you could do.
I think that was game one of the finals when he added that third one, because that was the one where he and AI both went for 40, and they were both number one overall picks going for 40.
I mean, like three 40-20 games in one postseason.
And at that time, he was just as unstoppable as what Wimby is right now, because he was at his biggest, the most dominant, and people was just hanging out.
Well, he wasn't knocking down threes. No. Hell, he couldn't make free throws. Like, he's scoring 40 points right around the rim. That's right how he did but was still going out and getting 40 and 20 in three different games in one postseason.
With people hanging off of him.
I'll tell you what, not to open up another discussion topic, but I always have trouble when I'm thinking about my all-time greats list of how I compare Shaq to Russell, Wilt, Jabbar. I always have where do I put him?
Not to knock Shaq, but here's a fun one for you. 19 seasons, he never led the league in rebounds or block shots.
Wow, how about that?
Never. The key big man categories, but he never led the league one season.
I mean, the rebounding was you had
to. He would always be one, two, or three, in the top three. And he did lead the nation in rebounding in college. Yeah. So
you said against the Sacramento Kings?
That was Vlade.
Was that D-Bots? Yeah, I was going to say, was that him? Okay.
The other guys who did it multiple times in a series, Elgin Baylor did it.
Wow.
In 1962. Yeah. Wilt did it in two different series in 1962. He also did it in 1960. Again, Chamberlain, 40-20 games were like, they just called that a Tuesday.
Right.
I think Baylor has the second most all time.
Who does?
Elgin Baylor.
That's incredible.
Right. It's 6'5".
Yeah.
Because Elgin Baylor could levitate. Like, he was up there and he hung. It's almost like, when Ja was doing his thing, could be up there, and then guys are already on their way down, and he just hovered.
My dad pretty much said he was the predecessor for Michael, David Thompson, and all, Dr. J, and all those.
He's right. He's right. Because I remember, I had this little thing from, it was, I forget the company, but it was a record, like they would have recordings of different athletes, and Elgin Baylor, and I don't know who the announcer was, maybe it was Chick Hearn, but it would be, how he's saying, and he's elevating, Baylor, like almost like he's flying in the air. He was incredible, yeah.
All right, so we had two people that had that came in at the same time with the correct answer. So we will do the tiebreaker. Jay, Roadrunner or Coyote?
Oh, a Roadrunner. Yeah, I can't rock with no dude that don't know how that Acme products don't work.
I thought you would go with the underdog. I would take Coyote 100 out of 100 times. You got to go with the underdog.
The one time that he did get him, it was pretty cool to see, though.
I grew up, one of the grocery stores was Acme. You ever heard of Acme? It's in the Philadelphia area, Acme. But, of course, that wasn't it. I mean, it was.
Coyote's kind of like the city of Memphis. We keep taking our beatings where you got to keep getting up and you're trying to. So I think I'm offended that you took Roadrunner.
Yeah, but the Coyote never wins. Hopefully, Memphis, we have a few wins in our history and we'll have a few more. Coyote never wins whatsoever.
And he always sets himself up for the failure.
He does.
Hey, but you talk about levitating. He could levitate. When they would go off the cliff sometimes, there would be some time before he actually fell.
Yeah, he would have like about a good four-second delay.
Yeah, he'd like hold up a sign or something. So and then he would fall. He could levitate.
I saw a clip. I don't know how old it is. I don't even know who the comedian was, but he did a whole spiel on the Looney Tunes characters. And just, he went off. Oh, gosh, it was so funny.
I say this, Eli. Give me Speedy over the Roadrunner, though.
Speedy Gonzalez?
Oh, yeah. Speedy. I was a big Speedy Gonzalez fan.
But this guy, I'm trying to remember this actor, this comedian. He said, four of the main characters have speech impediments. Porky Pig, Elmer Fudd, four of them, he said. And then he's like, don't get me started with Pepe Le Pew. I mean, what he did, against women's will, just. It was a funny, funny, thing.
I was a kid, I always rooted for the Coyote. I wanted the Coyote to. I never rooted for Tom to get Jerry. I don't know, for whatever reason, I always wanted the Coyote to win, but I never wanted Tom to win.
Well, is Jerry the little guy?
Yeah, he was the mouse.
Jerry's the mouse.
The mouse.
The little guy, he's the mouse.
Well, I don't know. I never watched Tom and Jerry. That was one I didn't watch.
I mean, because Tom would just kind of be anal sometimes about certain
stuff. I think it's my deep-rooted hatred of cats. I never want a cat to win.
I have three cats in my house.
I don't ever want a cat to win anything because it's the same thing. It's but trying to catch them. I don't like mice, but. And I have nothing against Roadrunners to begin with. But I always wanted the coyote to get the Roadrunner. I never wanted Tom to get Jerry.
So, you ever seen a Roadrunner up close?
UTSA.
No, I mean I was out in Arizona golfing, man. Those Roadrunners, they're pretty cool, man. They're really cool.
So you say you had a deep hatred for cats, so that means Heathcliff is completely off your list.
That's weird because I actually loved Heathcliff. Okay. Now I think about it.
Did you hate Garfield?
I had no problem with Garfield. Lazy fat.
Like
cat.
You.
Garfield and the other one, there was always Garfield, and then there was Riff Raff and that group that were like a
Riff
separate
Raff
little
and
cartoon.
The Cadillac Cats, yeah.
So I actually liked Heathcliff, and I liked Riff Raff and that gang even probably a little bit better. But I don't know. Now that's weird.
Is Riff Raff
like
the
that.
One with the laugh?
He's the one that he had like the white hat.
Who was the one? Remember the?
I don't remember the other
dastardly guy, and he had the cat, and he went. You know what I'm talking about?
That's Dr. Claw. That's Inspector Gadget.
Gadget had the cat.
His nemesis, Dr. Claw,
is a cat.
Had the cat.
Too many cats.
Who are the other guys in Riff Raff's gang?
Mongo was the big purple one.
I do remember Mongo.
I couldn't remember all the rest of them. All the rest of them. I remember Mongo, though.
I don't even know that what you're talking about with Riff
Raff. I actually still watch Heathcliff every now and then if I catch
when
it on
Heathcliff
YouTube.
When Heathcliff was on, like, that was a separate, like, the part yeah, they, were, of, like, they were, did a separate one. That was Riff Raff and his gang.
But that wasn't a Looney Tune.
No. Heathcliff have his cartoon, and then Riff Raff and the Cadillac Cats would be, like, the second
half.
They lived in a junkyard and did anything like that.
It was Looney Tunes, and then was it Merry Melodies?
Yeah, they're the same people, the Merry Melodies.
Yeah,
Looney
okay,
Looney Tunes.
All right. So tonight at the Huey's in Germantown on Farmington Boulevard, it will be the third of four stops for the Tigers on Tour, University of Memphis, with Penny Hardaway, with Charles Huff, with a lot of the coaches that are on the staff. But I bring up that because Charles Huff yesterday came up in conversation out at the golf course, actually. So I ran into a gentleman who was at the and is part of the St. Louis Men's Club, the St. Louis Church Men's Club. And he said Coach Huff spoke there the other day, like 2 days ago or whatever it was. And he said he just knocked their socks off. He was fabulous, which does not surprise me because we had him on the show here recently. We've had him on a couple of times going back to his introductory press conference. And he wins the press conference. And he speaks with so much passion. But these guys were probably hearing him for the first time, and they were just knocked off their seats from Charles Huff, which was great. But I brought that up because Charles Huff, he said, was very transparent with things about NIL. And when we had him on, I didn't ask him about particular figures. He gave figures according to this gentleman at the St. Louis Men's Club, and said that Memphis is running on a budget of $10 million for football. I don't think I've ever heard that exact number. And he said, but it's up there, but it's not the best in the conference. And then he said that South Florida is expected next year to have $20 million for their football budget.
You called that one.
Right. South Florida, they're the next one. But Coach Huff talked about the ACC expanding. I don't know the year he said, but it might have been like 2028. It was before 2030. Again, this is just his thoughts, and doesn't mean that's going to come to fruition. And he said, we're trying to put Memphis in the best light, the best position to get into the ACC. He was as transparent as probably any coach. Again, this is secondhand. I'm not hearing, I wasn't there, but this gentleman was talking about all the things that he said. But when he talked about the $10 million budget, I'm thinking, okay, that's, for Memphis, it's pretty good, $10 million, because with basketball, Penny Hardaway recently said with Wolo that really to be at the top of the American, you need 7. And then really the number you're trying to get to, though, to be competitive with other teams is 10. We had Aki Collins on, Maryland assistant, former Memphis assistant, who said, what, 14 to 15 million to be a top 20 type caliber team, possibility of being that. But if you take his word for it, you got to think that Memphis is probably around seven then with basketball. You couple that with what Coach Huff said for football, that's $17 million between those two programs, which, again, doesn't seem like a lot compared to, name them, Indiana, Texas Tech, and then all the big boys, right? But that's pretty good. I mean, because 20.5 is that number right now, right? 20.5?
That's the rev share number.
Is the rev share number. But you're talking about $17 million for NIL, then whatever they got for rev share, that's pretty good. And hopefully,
well, I'm going to guess that $10 million
is part of the
is rev share. That's their whole thing.
Well, he also said that, I think, I'm trying to do this by memory, 75 players make money, like they make good, like between like 50 G's and whatever it is. And then there's several players that make more, but he doesn't have those players that are making $3 million or $2 million like some of those other programs do, because their budgets are $20 million or more, $30 million, and his is $10. But that a lot of the guys are getting a good piece of the pie, but not this astronomical amount of money. And that's the difference between probably a player who's heading to the NFL. Not that they can't produce a couple of guys that certainly have a chance to go to the NFL. But I was impressed that, one, he was transparent. Two, that's pretty good numbers to me. I think that's pretty good numbers for where they are right now.
Folks, if you've got a move coming up, moving into a new home or maybe a new office, well, you need to get the professionals for Black Tie Moving to take care of moving your stuff for you. They will be sure to take good care of your belongings, take good care of you, really, throughout the process to make sure it goes as smoothly, as easily as possible, reducing the stress and everything else on you during that move. Whether it's just across town, whether it's across country, wherever it is, whatever you need from them, folks at Black Tie will make sure to take care of it. Give them a call. They will work with you to come up with a plan for your move. Fitting your needs, that's very important. And fitting your budget as well. That's also, of course, very, very important. Give them a call, 901-316-6196, or go to blacktiemoving.com/Memphis. Talk to the professionals. Talk to the experts at Black Tie Moving.
All right, one more segment to go. When we come back, the other conference championship series begins in the NBA playoffs. Do the Cavaliers and Knicks have what it takes to make it as thrilling as we had last night between the Spurs and the Thunder? And in the you only had one job category, I got a story for you when we return. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
It's 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Diamonds are forever.
Woo! Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Seattle wide receiver Jackson Smith and the Jigba was the offensive player of the year for the Super Bowl champions. And he posted this on social media. It's him receiving the plaque from the National Football League for his award. Unfortunately, they got the spelling correct on his name, because the Jigba's a tough name to spell. Jackson Smith, the hyphen, everything's good, except his Offensive Player of the Year trophy says the 2025 Defensive Player of the Year. You had one job. Come on.
He should keep that award, too, and still get the other one.
I wonder if Myles Garrett got the offensive one. Right. I wonder if they just switched him.
Now, there's a quote here, and I don't know, because I don't want to put this on. The audio will come on the air, but there's a quote. I assume this quote's from him. He says, it's getting disrespectful at this point. I don't know if that's tongue-in-cheek. He's kidding around, but that's the quote. But anyway, again, the one job, failure. It wasn't a failure last night for Victor Wembanyama. 41 points, 24 rebounds, 3 blocks. The Spurs go into Oklahoma City. They win game one of their best of seven Western Conference final in double overtime, 122-115. And that's the fifth time in six games they have beaten the defending champions this year. I know regular season, players are in, players are out, there's injuries, this and that. Hey, in this game, the key injury happened to be with the Spurs because De'Aaron Fox couldn't go. One of their starters. And yet they still won that game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously for the Spurs, and I don't know if he'll be back for game two or when exactly he's supposed to be back, but to go in there, steal home court advantage right off the bat without De'Aaron Fox. You know, the teams in the East, whoever wins the East is rooting for seven games like last night in the West. That's the chance for the team, whoever comes out of the East, to me, to have any chance in the NBA Finals, is these two teams just beat the crap out of each other, and whoever escapes is just worn down against whoever they're playing out of the East.
Yes, although I don't think it'll make a difference when it's all said and done. That other series begins tonight in New York, the Knicks and the Cavaliers. The Knicks, a 7.5-point favorite. Guys, what do you think for this series?
I don't think Cleveland's got enough bullets to last for too long. Coming out back-to-back seven-game series, physical style, going up against a physical team of the Knicks. I think the Knicks just too much.
Yeah, I just think the Knicks are too good for them.
How many? I think it goes six.
At best, six. It might be over in five, though.
Yeah, I think more towards five.
And
the Knicks are now. The Knicks have been off now for a long time because they were playing. They were obviously playing so well.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been amazing. You know, ever since probably with the last game, basically in the first round and through the second round. So maybe they've kind of show a little bit of rust tonight, yeah. And this might be the chance. Maybe much like you know, and I don't think it was a rust that led for San Antonio last night, but maybe you could go in there and get a little rust and get off to a good start and maybe steal tonight's game, but I don't expect that to
would
happen.
Would an Allen-Mobley combination have a better chance against Wembanyama than what the Knicks offer?
That's a good question.
Or does it even matter?
It does not matter. I don't know if it's going to matter.
Two other NBA stories real quick. And again, we're wrapping things up at 9 and heading out of here because Ole Miss baseball comes your way in the SEC tournament. Draymond Green, doing what he does, speaking his mind, called Shams Charania's tipping the NBA MVP announcement pathetic. A lot of people have a problem with that. Also, there is a battle.
And Shams came out, and it was nothing about it mistaking AM or PM. He said, listen, I'm doing my job. If I've got news, I'm going to report it. I do wonder.
Do you respect that?
If that announcement was going to be on ESPN that night, would he have done it?
No, he would not have done that. Do you respect what he said? I'm a reporter. I find that information. I can confirm it. I'm going with it.
That's what I was saying yesterday. If they didn't want him to leak it, they would have told him not to leak it.
Okay, then the other story is the online battle that's going on between Jaylen Brown and Stephen A. Smith. Jay Ham, are you keeping up with this?
A little bit of it because I get tired of Stephen A. in general, but I was glad to see Jaylen Brown say what a lot of people feel anyway.
Jaylen Brown, I think basically, I'm paraphrasing, said, I'll shut up when you step down, when you retire.
And a lot of people feel that way about Stephen A. It's just they're tired of him at this point.
I get tired of him, but I do respect what he has built. How can you not respect what the guy has been able to build? Now, I think at times, now he knows basketball. He obviously knows a lot of sports, but sometimes he just BS's up there. I mean, just the guy he had yesterday, I was watching a little bit, and it was MMA fighter, and I'm like, he has no idea who this guy is.
I think where he struggles at with today's players is that he's not connected with this generation of players. He's connected with the guys that are doing podcasts now.
Yes, yes, yes.
And he's, you know, you look at him and Jaylen, it's like, nah, this is a complete disconnect. This generation of players don't look at you the same way that other one does.
That's an interesting point. That really, but then you have guys like a Mike Wilbon, who's still well respected, and he's
but he
older.
Never really comes sideways at the generation of players. So it's kind of a more respect thing.
He doesn't, but he'll speak his mind sometimes. I mean,
he's from the old country,
especially when you watch PTI.
Yeah, and that's why I even like him when I see him over across the screen when he's doing, you know, with the Get Up crew. It's like Mike Wilbon should be there. He's well respected, knows the game and everything.
That guy has more energy. I mean, yeah, he's getting up there, and he's not as old as Kornheiser, but my gosh, he seems to be everywhere. All right, so the Rebels and the Missouri Tigers, they are getting set to play game one of the SEC baseball tournament from Hoover, Alabama. The pregame coming up. First pitch is set for 9:30. The winner gets Mississippi State tomorrow. So good chance tomorrow we'll have an abbreviated show. I want to thank Connor O'Gara and Mickey Barker for joining us on the program today. DeMichael Cole joins us tomorrow among our guests. It's Ole Miss and Missouri. It's coming up next right here on Sports 56, 98.5 FM. Have a great day. Enjoy the game, everybody.
Be sure to download our Hub 9.